Berkshire Hathaway Inc. To the shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway Inc. Operating earnings improved to $41.09 million in 1980 from $36 million in 1979, but return on beginning equity capital, with securities valued at cost, fell to 17.8% from 18.6%. We believe the latter yardstick to be the most appropriate measure of single-year managerial economic performance. Informed use of that yardstick, however, requires an understanding of many factors, including accounting policies, historical carrying values of assets, financial leverage, and industry conditions. In your evaluation of our economic performance, we suggest that two factors should receive a special attention: one of a positive nature peculiar to a large extent to our own operation, and one of a negative nature applicable to corporate performance generally. Let's look at the bright side first. Non-controlled ownership earnings. When one company owns part of another company, appropriate accounting procedures pertaining to that ownership interest must be selected from one of three major categories. The percentage of voting stock that is owned, in large part, determines which category of accounting principle should be utilized. Generally accepted accounting principles require, subject to exceptions, naturally, as with our former bank subsidiary, full consolidation of sales, expenses, taxes, and earnings of business holdings more than 50% owned. Blue chip stamps, 60% owned by Berkshire Hathaway Inc., falls into this category. Therefore, all blue chip income and expense items are included in full in Berkshire's consolidated statement of earnings, with the 40% ownership interest of others in blue chip's net earnings reflected in the statement as a deduction for minority interest. Full inclusion of underlying earnings from another class of holdings, companies own 20% to 50%, usually called and investees. Earnings from such companies, for example, Wesco Financial, controlled by Berkshire but only 48% owned, are included via a one-line entry in the owner's statement of earnings. Unlike the over minus 50% category, all items of revenue and expense are omitted. Just a proportional share of net income is included. Thus, if corporation owns one-third of corporation B, one-third of B's earnings, whether or not distributed by B, will end up at A's earnings. There are some modifications, both in this and the over minus 50% category, for intercorporate taxes and purchase price adjustments, the explanation of which we will save for a later day. We know you can hardly wait. Finally come holdings representing less than 20% ownership of another corporation's voting securities. In these cases, accounting rules dictate that the owning companies include in the earnings only dividends received from such holdings. A distributed earnings are ignored. Thus, should we own 10% of Corporation X with earnings of $10 million in 1980, we would report in our earnings ignoring relatively minor taxes on intercorporate dividends, either a $1 million if X declared the full $10 million in dividends, the $500,000 if X paid out 50%, or $5 million in dividends, or C0 if X reinvested all earnings. We impose a short and oversimplified course in accounting upon you because Berkshire's concentration of resources in the insurance field produces a corresponding concentration of its assets and companies in the third less than 20% owned category. Many of these companies pay out relatively small proportions of their earnings and dividends. This means that only a small proportion of their current earning power is recorded in our own current operating earnings. But while our reported operating earnings reflect only the dividends received from such companies, our economic well-being is determined by their earnings, not their dividends. Our holdings in this third category of companies have increased dramatically in recent years as our insurance business has prospered and as securities markets have presented particularly attractive opportunities in the common stock area. The large increase in such holdings, plus the growth of earnings experienced by those partially owned companies, has produced an unusual result. Part of our earnings that these companies retained last year, the part not paid to us in dividends, exceeded the total reported annual operating earnings of Berkshire Hathaway. Thus, conventional accounting only allows less than half of our earnings iceberg to appear above the surface in plain view. Within the corporate world, such a result is quite rare. In our case, it is likely to be recurring. Our own analysis of earnings reality differs somewhat from generally accepted accounting principles, particularly when those Principles must be applied in a world of high and uncertain rates of inflation. But it's much easier to criticize than to improve. Such accounting rules. The inherent problems are monumental. Me. I've owned 100% of businesses whose reported earnings were not worth close to 100 cents on the dollar to us, even though, in an accounting sense, we totally control their disposition. The control. Unless we reinvested all earnings, massive deterioration in the value of assets already in place would occur. But those reinvested earnings had no prospect of earning anything close to a market return on capital. We have also owned small fractions of businesses with extraordinary reinvestment possibilities whose retained earnings had an economic value just far in excess of 100 cents on the dollar. The value to Berkshire Hathaway of retained earnings is not determined by whether we own 100%, 50%, 20%, or 1% of the businesses in which they reside. Rather, the value of those retained earnings is determined by the use to which they are put, and the subsequent level of earnings produced by that usage. This is true whether we determine the usage, or whether managers we did not hire but did elect to join determine that usage. It's the act that counts, not the actors. And the value is in no way affected by the inclusion or non-inclusion of those retained earnings in our own reported operating earnings. Affair. Tree grows in a forest partially owned by us, but we don't record the growth in our financial statements. We still own part of the tree. Our view, we warn you, is non-conventional. But we would rather have earnings for which we did not get accounting credits, but to good use in a 10% owned company by a management we did not personally hire, than have earnings for which we did get credit put into projects of more dubious potential by another management, even if we are that management. We can't resist pausing here for a short commercial. 1. Usage of retained earnings we often greet with special enthusiasm when practiced by companies in which we have an investment interest is repurchase of their own shares. The reasoning is simple. If a fine business is selling in the marketplace for far less than intrinsic value, what more certain or more profitable utilization of capital can there be than significant enlargement of the interests of all owners at that bargain price? The competitive nature of corporate acquisition activity almost guarantees the payment of a full, frequently more than full, price when a company buys the entire ownership of another enterprise. But the auction nature of security market often allows finely run companies the opportunity to purchase portions of their own businesses at a price under 50% of that needed to acquire the same earning power through the negotiated acquisition of another enterprise. Long-term corporate results. As we have noted, we evaluate single-year corporate performance by comparing operating earnings to shareholders' equity with securities valued at cost. A long-term yardstick of performance, however, includes all capital gains or losses, realized or unrealized. We continue to achieve a long-term return on equity that considerably exceeds the average of our yearly returns. The major factor causing this pleasant result is a simple one. The retained earnings of those non-controlled holdings we discussed earlier have been translated into gains in market value. Of course, this translation of retained earnings into markets price appreciation is highly uneven. It goes in reverse some years, unpredictable as to timing, and unlikely to materialize on a precise dollar-for-dollar basis. And a silly purchase price for a block of stock in a corporation can negate the effects of a decade of earnings retention by that corporation. But when purchase prices are sensible, some long-term market recognition of the accumulation of retained earnings almost certainly will occur. Periodically even will receive some frosting on the cake, with market appreciation far exceeding post-purchase retained earnings. In the 16 years since present management assumed responsibility for Berkshire, book value per share with insurance held equities valued at market has increased from $19.46 to $400.80, or 20.5% compounded annually. You've done better. Value of the mineral content in the human body compounded at 22% annually during the past decade. It is encouraging, moreover, to realize that our record was achieved, despite many mistakes. The list is too painful and lengthy to detail here, but it clearly shows that a reasonably competitive corporate batting average can be achieved in spite of a lot of managerial strikeouts. Our insurance companies will continue to make large investments in well-run, favorably situated, non-controlled companies that very often will pay out in dividends only small for portions of their earnings. Following this policy, we would expect our long-term returns to continue to exceed the returns derived annually from reported operating earnings. Our confidence in this belief can easily be quantified. If we were to sell the equities that we hold and replace them with long-term tax-free bonds, our reported operating earnings would rise immediately by over $30 million annually. Such a shift tempts us. Not at all. So much for the good news. Results for owners. Unfortunately, earnings reported in corporate financial statements are no longer the dominant variable that determines whether there are any real earnings for you, the owner. For only gains in purchasing power represent real earnings on investment. If you forego 10 hamburgers to purchase an investment, B. receive dividends which, after tax, buy 2 hamburgers, and C. receive upon sale of your holdings, after tax proceeds that will buy 8 hamburgers, then D. you have had no real income from your investment, no matter how much it appreciated in dollars. You may feel richer, but you won't eat richer. High rates of inflation create a tax on capital that makes much corporate investment unwise, at least if measured by the criterion of a positive real investment return to owners. This. A hurdle rate. Corporation, in order to produce any real return for its individual owners, has increased dramatically in recent years. The average tax-paying investor is now running up a down escalator whose pace has accelerated to the point where his upward progress is nil. For example, in a world of 12% inflation, a business earning 20% on equity, which very few manage consistently to do, and distributing it all to individuals in the 50% bracket, is chewing up their real capital, not enhancing it. Half of the 20% will go for income tax. The remaining 10% leaves the owners of the business with only 98% of the purchasing power they possessed at the start of the year, even though they have not spent a penny of their earnings. The investors in this bracket would actually be better off with a combination of stable prices and corporate earnings on equity capital of only a few percent. If basic income tax is alone, unaccompanied by any implicit inflation tax, never can turn a positive corporate return into a negative owner return. Even if there were 90% personal income tax rates on both dividends and capital gains, some real income would be left for the owner at a zero inflation rate. But the inflation tax is not limited by reported income. Inflation rates, not far from those recently experienced, can turn the level of positive returns achieved by a majority of corporations into negative returns for all owners, including those not required to pay explicit taxes. For example, if inflation reached 16%, owners of the 60% plus of corporate America earning less than this rate of return would be realizing a negative real return even if income taxes on dividends and capital gains were eliminated. Of course, the two forms of taxation coexist and interact. Since explicit taxes are levied on nominal, not real, income, thus you pay income taxes on what would be deficits if returns to stockholders were measured in constant dollars. At present inflation rates, we believe individual owners in medium or high tax brackets is distinguished from tax-free entities such as pension funds, Lehman-Sinery institutions, etc. Should expect no real long-term return from the average American corporation, even though these individuals reinvest the entire after-tax proceeds from all dividends they receive. The average return on equity of corporations is fully offset by the combination of the implicit tax on capital levied by inflation and the explicit taxes levied both on dividends and gains in value produced by retained earnings. As we said last year, Berkshire has no corporate solution to the problem. We'll say it again next year or two. Inflation does not improve our return on equity. Indexing is the insulation that all seek against inflation. But the great bulk, although there are important exceptions, are corporate capital is not even partially indexed. Of course, earnings and dividends per share usually will rise if significant earnings are saved by a corporation, i.e. reinvested instead of paid as dividends. But that would be true without inflation. A thrifty wage earner, likewise, could achieve regular annual increases in his total income without ever getting a pay increase. If he were willing to take only half of his paycheck in cash, his wage dividend, and consistently add the other half his retained earnings, neither this high-saving wage earner nor the stockholder in a high-saving corporation whose annual dividend rate increases while its rate of return on equity remains flat is truly indexed. For capital to be truly indexed, return on equity must rise i.e., business earnings consistently must increase in proportion to the increase in the price level without any need for the business to add to capital, including working capital employed. Increased earnings produced by increased investment don't count. Only a few businesses come close to exhibiting this ability, and Berkshire Hathaway isn't one of them. We, of course, have a corporate policy of reinvesting earnings for growth, diversity, and strength, which has the incidental effect of minimizing the current imposition of explicit taxes on our owners. However, on a day-by-day basis, you will be subjected to the implicit inflation tax, and when you wish to transfer your investment in Berkshire into another form of investment or into consumption, you also will face explicit taxes. Sources of earnings. The table below shows the sources of Berkshire's reported earnings. Berkshire owns about 60% of Blue Chip Stamps, which in turn owns 80% of Wesco Financial Corporation. The table shows aggregate earnings of the various business entities, as well as Berkshire's share of those earnings. All of the significant capital gains and losses attributable to any of the business entities are aggregated in the realized securities gains figure at the bottom of the table and are not included in operating earnings. Our calculation of operating earnings also excludes the gain from sale of Mutual's branch offices. In this respect, it differs from the presentation in our audited financial statements that includes this item in the calculation of the net earnings. Earnings before income taxes, after tax, total, Berkshire share, in thousands of dollars, 1980, 1979, 1980, 1979, 1980, 1979. Total earnings all entities $85,942, $56,422, $53,122, $42,817, earnings from operations. Insurance group. Underwriting dollar. $6,738, $3,742, $6,741, $3,637, $2214. Net investment income, $30,939, $24,204, $30,927, $24,216, $25,607, $20,106. Berkshire Wambach Textiles, 500A, 1723, 500A, 1723, 202, 840A. Associated retail stores, 2440, 2775, 2440, 2775, 1169, 1280. See Scandies, 15,031, 12,785, 8,958, 7,598, 4,212, 3,448. Buffalo Evening News, 2805, 4,617, 1672, 2744, 816, 1333. Blue Chip Stamps Parent, 7,699, 2399, 4,588, 1425, 3,016, 1624. Illinois National Bank, 5,347, 5,200, 5,614, 4,731, 5,027. Wesco Financial Parent, 2916, 2413, 1392, 1098, 1044, 937. Mutual Savings and Loan, 5,814, 10,447, 2775, 4,751. 1974. 3,261. Precision Steel. 2833. 3,254. 1,352. 1,480. 656. 723. Interest on debt. 12,230. 8,248. 9,390. 5,860. 4,809. 2,900. Avila. 21,70. 13,42. 1,590. 996. 1,255. 753. Total earnings from operations: $66,361, $57,984, $54,389, $46,813, $41,922, $35,988. Mutual savings and loan, sale of branches, 5,873, 2,803. 1,293. Realized securities gain, 13,711. 10,648. 12,954. 9,614. 9,907. 6,829. Total earnings all ended is $85,945. $68,632. $70,146, $56,427, $53,122, $42,817, equals. Blue chip stamps and Wesco are public companies with reporting requirements of their own. On pages 40 to 53 of this report, we have reproduced the narrative reports of the principal executives of both companies, in which they describe 1918 operations. We recommend a careful reading and suggest that you particularly note the superb job done by Louis Vincenti and Charlie Munger in repositioning mutual savings and loan. A copy of the full annual report of either company will be mailed to any Berkshire shareholder upon request to Mr. Robert H. Bird for Blue Chip Stamps, 5801 Southeastern Avenue, Los Angeles, California, 90040, Ortimus S. Vet Decode for Wesco Financial Corporation, 315 East Colorado Boulevard, Pasadena, California, 91109. As indicated earlier, undistributed earnings in companies we do not control are now fully as important as the reported operating earnings detailed in the preceding table. Distributed portion, of course, finds its way into the table, primarily through the net investment income section of insurance group earnings. We show below Berkshire's proportional holdings in those non-controlled businesses for which only distributed earnings, dividends, are included in our own earnings. No. Berkshire's cost. Markets. Sierra's omitted. 434,550. Affiliated Publications, Inc. $28.21, $12,222, $464,317, Aluminum Company of America, $25,577, $27,685, $475,217b, Cleveland Cliffs Iron Company, $12,942, $15,894, $1,983,812b. General Foods, Inc.